Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself. She's back. She's always back. She keeps bringing me and beating me down, but I got to get her back on again so she can square me up. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of Elevators for Citizens Grain, or vice president of Grains for Citizens Elevator. It was one of those two I can never remember, but you don't guys don't listen to me for my memory. Anyways, what's up, Angie?
Oh, not too much. Just living the dream, sitting here on a cold, cold morning. We ended up with like 12 inches of snow here in northern Iowa. You know, all of the places I could move in all of the world, and I moved to northern Iowa.
Well, you're a farmer, baby.
I know. I'm a farm girl, so I guess it works. And I keep reminding myself that Texas has rattlesnakes and big spiders. So it's warmer down there, and they're talking about planting corn here in another month. And here I sit, you know, ass deep in snow, but we don't have giant spiders, and we, as far as I know, at least in our neck of the woods right here, we have no poisonous snakes. So I guess I should just be happy. Well, I'll shut up and wish that it's June.
And if you weren't so short, you wouldn't be ass deep in snow. You'd be up knee deep in snow.
That's very true. That's what my kid is. He'll be 8 months old here in another couple days, and he's about half as tall as I am anymore. I laugh about it. I'm like, you have grown a lot, and mommy's not growing anymore. So I am a short little package.
So mommy, listen. Give me your first feelings of the first week in the Trump administration, and has he done anything that would help farmers in general? Has there anything been good? But what are your first thoughts of how the Donald is doing as far as the new president of the United States?
Well, the Dow is showing some great excitement. Obviously, we broke that 20,000 point mark. That's been big. That's helpful for retirement for a lot of folks out there that are wishing they could retire. I had a conversation with a gentleman who's also in the grain industry the other day, and I said, you know, I don't feel any different at 20,000. And he said it's an age thing. I'm way too young to care. Where for him, you know, another couple thousand points, and he can tell the man to go flog himself. So he's all excited, and so that's good. I mean, that I think that helps even with a consumer that's not in the market, which most have no true understanding what that means to them. And when I say most, I mean your average Joe six pack consumer. It still gives them confidence, though. If you tell them that the Dow is up, they're going to be pretty excited about the fact that the Dow is up there at that 20,000 point mark, or it continues to go up. So I think that'll help on that standpoint. You know, perhaps we start to see people spending some more money. I have mixed feelings on that. I always worry about people spending money they don't have. You know, because that's what got us into the housing wreck that we were in here 10 years ago almost now. But I think it's beneficial. It helps. I'm watching that side. And then at the same time, I'm watching what's going on. You know, the regulatory standpoint is helpful. You know, the discussion that we're going to see WOTUS, you know, the waters of the United States kind of pulled back is helpful or beneficial to some farmers. There were some true concerns over that legislation or those laws being enacted. So that's helpful. We have seen RINs collapse here recently, the on the renewable fuel side, just because we're not certain as to what we'll see happen with the EPA and those changes there with renewables. But from an overall standpoint, the first week it is what it is, you know, it's going along and I think it's a okay start. We've talked before, I'm a big time libertarian. So I question some of the moves that we see or the executive orders, the wall, you know, things of that nature. But for a farmer's standpoint right now, you know, other than the concern over trade, we're cooking right along.
And of course, you know, you mentioned this, people spending money that they don't have. Well, it's actually spending money they don't have to buy things they can't afford. And that is always going to be an issue. And of course, that is one of the problems that I find out when we have all this excitement, because again, if you look at any market, and you obviously are one of the top grainers in the world, and you get it, and you know we've seen this movie in that space as well, where everybody buys because they know they can't go down again, and of course, what happens as soon as they all get in, the ship collapses, and of course, that's always a problem. And I wonder if you look at the grain space right now, are you seeing anything that is setting off any alarm bells? I know we were both bullish corn and wheat, and a little bit not quite so bullish soybeans, but we've seen obviously soybeans had an 8.5% rally off of the USDA report, which is bullshit. But and of course we continue to see wheat and corn stay strong. Any thoughts on those venues?
I think we continue. I mean, for me, short term, the moves aren't really, there isn't really anything in the market structure or from a news standpoint right now that should impact the markets in the short term. You know, we're not in a growing season. You know, we have South American weather, of course, to pay attention to, but 90% of people who are actually trading the market are paying attention to South American weather via whatever comes in their email. You know, they'll blindly listen to whatever this weather guy says or this market analyst says, and they're not really, you know, they're not boots on the ground, or they're not there watching how production's working or something like that. You know, it's a totally different market structure in January than it is in June or July. So from a short-term standpoint, we really have nothing that'll change our direction, significantly speaking, you know, now that we've made it past that quarterly stocks report without some sort of negative surprise in there. The only thing that could really impact things on from a day-to-day standpoint would be if we saw, you know, export sales numbers, which we'll get out this morning. You know, if we started seeing massive cancellations or massive cancellations would be more of a mover than even sales. I mean, we've seen Unknown come in and purchase corn here lately, which Unknown is we won't know until they switch it into their name. And it used to be you always assumed that was China Unknown. And it's not out of the question that it could be China. I mean, there's some real interesting developments happening. Right now, China is sitting on 44% of the world's corn. So you hear all of the time about how much corn we have globally and how we're not at risk of running out and blah, blah, blah. You know, the U.S. has 2.4 billion bushel, which is double the minimum pipeline needed. And everyone's just content and confident that we have more than enough corn. Well, suddenly we're starting to hear rumblings that China is looking to increase their stockpiles. They may up their imports a little bit here. You know, things of that nature. And then that's out of the same breath, you'll hear, well, they're going to export corn to Korea. So I don't really think anyone knows what's happening with China, except for maybe China. And that's questionable at best. So there's some real developments there that I'm paying attention to. But even then, the market yesterday, we saw an export sale announcement, another one, the second one this week, I believe. And the market gained a penny or so. Right now, it just seems to be stuck in a range. There's no real reason for it to do anything too crazy. And we're just waiting to see if the soybean sales that we have are being shipped. So my mindset on the market structure hasn't changed too much. I still anticipate a bit of a corn rally here going forward, because I think folks are going to discuss how many acres we could lose. We did have
Hold that thought. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, at the goddess of grains on Twitter. She didn't include the Bubba Show, but we'll have to get her to change that stuff. But anyways, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And of course, make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as go to bubbatrading.com. And you can now get Bubba's Bottom Line, my weekly TV podcast. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more from the goddess herself, the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we're coming right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains herself, and of course the vice president of grains for Citizens Elevator. But of course, she's ass up her ass in snow because she's in Iowa right now, and that's where she lives and where she farms. All right, so you were talking about what was going on with corn and now soybeans, and so what's your take on soybeans as far as anything surprising coming up?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think the market got a big push when we started to discuss Argentina flooding and things like that. That was the big thing. Everyone started talking about, oh, we're going to lose, you know, several million metric ton out of Argentina, which equates to about 300, 400 million bushel, maybe at the very, very high end. But no one ever mentions the fact that Argentina is holding on to over a billion bushel of soybeans, according to the USDA. Now, you and I have had conversations about what the USDA means and how accurate they could or could not be. And, you know, so the best thing, in my opinion, when it comes to someone with a massive amount of projected carryout is to see them have a production issue, because then they have to put their money where their mouth is. You know, if they've lost 300-400 million bushel of production, then they should be able to start. The domestic market should encourage that they pull these beans that they have sitting in grain bags or wherever the hell they're sitting. They should be pulling them out of storage and putting them into production. So I guess at this point, I can't say that the market should rally too much based on that. But it did. I mean, we saw an 8% rally. We rallied 70 cents in something like 2 days. To me, it gave my growers another opportunity to get hedged up. The November board did not put a new high in place, whereas the March board did. So I think it just shows you that the new crop bean market really is kind of stalled out unless weather or something of that nature comes into play, and we won't see that until August. So at this point, you know, I think we stay supported, but why do we need to rally? So is where I'm at on the bean side.
So let's talk about news and how it affects. And now I'm going to give you my opinion about news. And to me, especially in today's world, people in the know already know what those reports are going to be long ahead before they come out. And there's very few surprises anymore in any type of economic news or in grains or in agriculture, because, you know, information flows so quickly right now that anybody who's watching it could actually track and actually put the numbers and put the report together themselves, because there's enough information out there. So I don't think there's that much of a big surprise. I think, in my opinion, the soybean rally was caused, I think they caught a few people too short and actually squeezed them up. I mean, you know, you typically don't get an 8.5% rally in January in soybeans unless there's a reason. And I think really what happened was more of a short covering rally versus anything else. And, you know, again, I believe that people like you, probably you're probably on top of it. You probably kind of knew what the news was going to be before it came out as well, because you're in the know. What do you think of my thesis or my theory?
I can't argue with it. I mean, to me, a lot of times, and that's what's most frustrating in commodities sometimes is by the time that it hits those that are coming in, your speculators, your big money players, the people that really can't tell you the difference between a bushel of corn and a bushel of soybeans by looking at it, you know, by the time they get the news that they want to buy, we've already heard about it. I mean, we knew that Argentina was going to deal with some really heavy rainfall by the end of November. I mean, the extended weather forecasts were talking about it. Now, granted, it wasn't until the pictures started hitting, you know, cattle being swept away down a river, or, you know, multiple fields underwater or something of that nature, that we really saw the market take off. And so, yeah, that is one of the frustrating sides of things, is I can sit here and tell my customers, you know, okay, I'm expecting the market to trade higher today because we're seeing these weather forecasts, yada, 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 and we're down 15 for no reason, but that's because the news has not circulated or hit the people that actually have the pocketbooks we need to see the market pump up. You know, and the same can be said for the move lower. All of a sudden we're in the midst of an 8% rally, you know, that really should have taken place 2 weeks prior, and you're waiting. You know that the downside's going to come, but you don't know when people are going to stop their buying spree. So yeah, I mean, I can't argue that. Unfortunately, most of the time the people in the know that are boots on the ground, you know, they have to wait for everyone else to catch up, so to speak. And that's why I always talk about headline risk with my customers is, you know, does a Chinese trade war necessarily impact soybeans? You know, are the Chinese going to snub their nose at U.S. soybeans? Short answer is probably no. They need it. You know, they're importing 85 million metric ton of beans every year, so the equivalent to 3 billion bushels, which is slightly below what we produced in the U.S. Last year. You know, they need soybeans. Now, they say that they're going to start producing them in their own country, which is perfectly feasible, but I think they're going to discover that the same thing the U.S. farmers found. Soybeans don't yield like corn. They're not a guaranteed revenue maker. And so, you know, do I think that that'll have a long-term impact on our overall soybean demand from China? Not likely, but the headline risk in and of itself is enough there to cause significant issue. You know, we saw it last year in corn exports. Everyone was talking about the strength of the dollar impacting corn exports and how it was limiting the demand for corn. Well, the people on the ground are watching and seeing that we started to hit the point where we were exporting, you know, 800,000 to a million metric ton a week all of a sudden. You know, our sales really, really picked up. And so you're still reading headlines about how the dollar is going to limit exports, but you're seeing actual sales ramping up big time, you know, and then all of a sudden, 2-3 months later, after the sales have been ramped up, you know, the market catches on. So there is some frustration in that, and it's definitely something we see and something we have to manage.
Well, wouldn't you say that, you know what, expert or no expert, dollar or no dollar, people still got to eat, and we still got to get we still got to get food out there, and sometimes they actually have to pay over for it to get it, but they're going to use it regardless. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we're not at a position – you know, where, you know, we've got a lifetime supply. I mean, this is counted on every year. So at some point, if you need it, you're going to buy it and you're going to have to pay up for it. Is that not true?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that 1,000 times over. You know, now there are some concerns out there. There are some countries that will sacrifice the good of their people, you know, under some guise of GMO or non-GMO. I mean, we saw it in South Africa when we had a drought and they couldn't produce their crop. I mean, their corn crop was absolutely decimated, it was a white corn crop, which is edible. It's not your regular, you know, field yellow dent number two corn. It was white corn, and that they had completely wiped out. And we have some versions of it up here that have similar to like Roundup Ready corn or something like that. And so there was a conversation that they weren't going to take it. You know, and now suddenly we're seeing that they are because their people need to eat. I mean, it's the same thing. You've got several billion or however many people in China that have grown to where they are accustomed to a high protein diet. You know, China's been the focus of our business, and we've had extreme conversations about China and their demand. No one's mentioning the fact that India is on pace to outgrow you know, China or see more growth than what China's seen, and they're going to be heavily reliant upon those plant-based proteins, soybeans, lentils, dry beans, things of that nature. You know, so we haven't even touched on that demand yet. And as we said, you know, they're going to have to eat. So it comes down to it to where the headline risk is scary and could be something that'll be really hard to weather our way through. I mean, you could have 6 months or even a year of just negative feeling towards the market due to the poor headlines that we have. And then suddenly we realize, okay, what were we worried about? And here we go. You know, next thing you know, we're rallying again because we've uncovered significant demand that we didn't think would be there. So it is something. I mean, it's always something you've got to battle.
The imagination, the imaginary demand that shows up. I've been doing this since 1980, and whenever we needed a rally, China was buying beans. And of course, we'll see how that plays out. But this is Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, also the goddess of great, the goddess. Am I lucky I got the goddess on the phone? Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, LibertyTalk.fm. We'll get you a download of the Bubba Show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And BubbaTrading.com, A, will get you all the hedging information you need to get ready for the new year, as well as the brand new Bubba's Bottom Line TV podcast. Make sure you go check it out. This is The Bubba Show. We'll be back with Angie Setzer right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Hurwitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And all right, Angie, so, you know, we've got some things going on, and I've said, and I believe, that wheat is going to be the strongest this year. I think that the dollar is going to be under some heavy duress. I think the rally was much anticipated, and now we're starting to see a little bit of a sell-off. And I believe it's going well under par. I think it's going back into the mid-90s. But there's an interesting thing going on right now, and what we see is in like Minnesota wheat right now is like $1.30 over Chicago wheat. How do you explain that? What is it? What does that mean, or does it mean anything?
Oh, it's a function of supply and demand. And that's the hardest part is your Minnesota wheat is your spring wheat, your hard red spring wheat. So it's that high protein, good quality, nice spring stuff that gets planted in April and harvested in August, September, October time frame. It's similar to what you see in the Southern Plains, which is what's really interesting about it is it's a hard wheat. It's a hard red wheat, and that's the Southern Plains is a hard red winter wheat, so it's planted in the fall and harvested in the late spring, early summer. Very different from the Chicago wheat. Chicago wheat is a soft red winter wheat. So our wheat in the Michigan market, which is the Chicago wheat, is based off from that. Soft wheat, it's made mostly for like pie crust, crackers, things of that nature, whereas this hard wheat is bread and staples that feed people. So the one thing that you saw in the Minneapolis wheat market or in spring wheat last year was acreage was a little lower than anticipated last spring. A lot of guys went out and planted corn and soybeans, things like that. And then secondly, we saw a problem with harvesting the wheat at the end of the year. So we hit a large amount of heavy rainfall. It damaged quality, especially in Western Canada. And so we saw some significant declines in not only the production capacity that had been out there, but also the quality or the available decent supplies. So as a result now, you know, that the demand hasn't gone anywhere. So that's what shows me that wheat has some strength to it. It's just because the global wheat stocks, and I'm using air quotes that you can't see, are so high. You know, it's like we talked about in corn. China's sitting on 48% of the world's wheat. So if you were to take our global wheat stocks and cut them in half, all of a sudden we go from a record number to being within one production problem of seeing a significant rally develop. So Minneapolis, I think, is kind of the canary in the coal mine, not in a negative sense, but more so in a sense that it shows you what can happen with one small production hiccup. Now, granted, we do have a significant amount of wheat on hand in the Southern Plains, which is what is interesting to me is we do have so much wheat down there, but it's not making its way into the Minnesota or the Minneapolis pipeline. And so there's some real interesting things going on down there. But I would watch wheat right now just in the sense that the conditions that the wheat was planted into this fall were quite poor. The winter has been less than ideal. The last thing that wheat needs is a 70 degree days followed by 15 degree days, 10 days later. It just does not do well in that sense, because it'll start to come out of dormancy and then it freezes. We've seen a significant lack of snow cover. There's been discussion about drought in the Delta and things like that. So to me, I agree. I think wheat is going to be the sleeper market, and I think everyone's counted it out. I think a lot of folks are continuing to believe that the dollar has to continue to strengthen. I question that, especially with the amount of spending that we're proposing, heading into our new leadership that we have in Washington. I do. I question if the dollar trade is old. I think, maybe buy the rumor, sell the fact sort of thing as well. So with that and the potential there for a production issue, my customers and I were waiting for at least $5 wheat on the July, and I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see it catch a lot of folks off guard and move higher than, even what it needs to. But I do. I think that this year is the year of wheat. Not only the year of Angie, but the year of wheat.
I do agree with that. I think that wheat will be extremely strong, and I think that we're going to see some great things. And now we've heard some major calls on soybeans. We've heard, $8 beans. Do you see that as a potential?
If it happens, it's not going to happen until October or November, but I really don't see it. I don't see a 7. I especially don't see a 6. I think we could fall below 9. I think we could see a return back to the levels that we saw a year ago, which were the mid to lower 8s on the downside. I don't think that's out of line if Brazil produces the crop that it appears as though they're going to produce, and the U.S. plants 90-some million acres of beans and has another 50 bushel to the acre yield, then yeah. But there's a whole hell of a lot of ifs that have to take place to make that happen. And, my mom always used to tell me, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. So let's see what we got going on. I mean, the potential is there, but would I trade with that target in mind today? Yeah. Hell no. You know what I mean? I think we see the market stay supported until the Brazil crop's in the pipeline. And, we get a feel for what we're looking at actual planted acreage wise, and there's just so many unknowns at this point in time for the market to try to completely fall apart that I wouldn't put the cart in front of the horse at this point on that.
Well, no, I mean, I always marvel at some calls that are made, in anything in stocks and in gold and in all these things. And you're like so sensational. And people buy into it. But the point is that there's so many things that can happen between now and then that could be good or bad for the market.
Yeah.
And so why would I want to put myself and go out on a limb? I remember I got booted off of CNBC almost permanently from the American show when I told Kramer he was kind of goofy when gold was at the highs in October of 2011. And he kept saying, oh, it's going higher, going to the moon. And I said, really?
Oh, yeah.
I said, really?
No.
Maybe there might be a sell-off here. And, of course, we're now in a bear market in gold. But, I mean, I always wonder at all these things that happen and why we make such big calls, because it's really not all that important. It's more important to understand the overall levels, especially for what you do and what I do. And if you're working with a farmer, they're not worried about what's going to happen 6 months from now. They're worried about protecting what they got now. And then they can worry about it, and that becomes a bigger issue. And I think that creates a lot more problems for farmers in general, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think it causes mass confusion. I mean, just this week alone, there was conversation on soybean calls. There was one person that, based on the chart moves and blah, 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 we could see $16 soybeans. What the fuck? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, just last week we had a guy say, well, we could see $6 soybeans. That causes great confusion for a farmer. And so that's why when I travel or when I have conversations with my growers, we try to center back to what matters, and that is, selling for a higher level than what it costs to produce and working within the constraints that we have of the production year and things of that nature. And, it always makes me laugh. People you know, the best line I've ever heard in my whole entire life is, the market rally is like sex. It feels the best just before it's over. And I just love that line. And I don't know where it came from or who brought it up, but it's so true, because what you'll see is that, you know, as beans hit this 1070 mark on the March and had rallied 8%, all of a sudden, all of these people are coming out of the woodwork explaining why it would need to go higher. You know, it's the same thing, buying gold at a high point in the market. What the hell? You know, it's one of those things that it just, it makes you wonder why. And we saw it last year in corn. I had customers calling and canceling target orders because they're turning on the TV. And as the market is rallying, I mean, the corn market rallied 45 cents, which was over a 10% gain, which I say anytime you get a 5 to 10% return on investment in a bear market, you need to be a seller, you know, in the grain markets at this point, because we are in a bear market. You know, we're seeing a 40-some cent, 50-cent rally in corn, and guys are calling, canceling their target orders because everyone on TV on Saturday morning explaining why the market needs to trade to 5 or 550. You know, it's the stuff like that that causes greater confusion than what it's worth many times, because the farmer at that point, you know, gives up what he needs and starts to focus on what he wants. And then, you know, 6 months later, we're at 302 on the September board. It lost a buck 25, buck 30 in the marketplace, and I have customers trying to figure out what to do with the 100-some-odd thousand bushel they'd left on price. Well, you know, they watched it gain and then watched all of that 150 grand that they had gained by being patient slowly dissipate. You know, and that's the hardest part of my job is the stuff that happens.
You got to manage those people, but it's no different than the stock market, because in 1929, in September, Andrew Mellon, the Secretary of Treasury, said that there's no need to worry. The high tide of prosperity will carry us through. And of course, in 2008, Paulson got on TV and said the banks have never been stronger. And of course, we know the results of that. And that's one of the problems when people get driven by the emotion and by people that don't have a clue, and that people that don't even have their own skin in the game. But we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, up to her ass in snow, she tells us. But she's also the vice president at Citizens Elevator. I got it over here. Citizens Elevator. I screw that up. But hey, that's the Bubba Show. That's me. And make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and check out the download of the show, as well as the rest of the content that we offer. And of course, my brand new Bubba's Bottom Line can be found at the Bubba, at BubbaTrading.com. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be back with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president of Citizens Elevator, right after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grain for Citizens Elevator. Also, the goddess of grains, and also interviews with other people, and doesn't mention the Bubba Show. I don't understand it. But anyways, well, what can I do? I have to suffer through. All right, Angie, we got unbelievable action going on in the meats, and the hog market is has me totally befuddled. I don't understand it. I don't see it. And I know that they're talking about the cold storage report. But again, I go back to that people already knew that. What's going on in the hog market first? Tell me. Explain it to me.
Well, to me, I think you're seeing the hog market consolidate. You know, I'm still caught off guard by the rally that we saw, you know, because we saw one. And every time I was talking to any of the quote-unquote experts in the meat market here over the last several months, they gave me reasons why the hog market needed to go to zero. You know, and all of a sudden we see a bit of a rally here, and we're trading up at a level that the market at this point doesn't appear to want to trade too far out of. You know, we did rally a bit here. One month we're up 9% almost on the February, and in the 3 month time frame, we've gained a significant amount of value there. And so to me, you know, I think much of that, in my opinion, came from just the excitement after the Trump election. you know, the thought that we are going to have more money available. And if you look back and kind of lay what hogs are our protein, you know, even live cattle has done the same thing here. You may put an overlay together of that versus the Dow and the outside market structure, you will see that we've seen a significant rally take place since the election. I think that's the thought process, that there's going to be extra money available out there and that people are going to spend that extra income that they have on you know, more meats and things like that. Now, hogs, I think, are somewhat surprising. And last week when I did, I was on a different market show. And said that I felt that we were in a pattern of consolidation, which if you look back, we have been. You know, we started kind of consolidating there around the start of the year after the New Year holiday and had stayed within a pretty tight range all the way up to Friday. And then all of a sudden yesterday, we saw a pretty significant jump, you know, with some increases in open interest and all of that. So, to me right now, yeah, you can look at the cold storage report. I think a lot of it has to do with weather. You know, we're not going to see anyone loading hogs when we have a foot of snow out here. We had that conversation. There were cancellations and things like that. You know, to me, I think at the short term, I would be a seller at this point just because of the overall supply and demand hasn't changed much from when we were trading significantly lower. But if you look at it from a five-year chart standpoint, you know, we're still on the low end of things. So perhaps we do see an increase in purchasing and maybe we run back up into the last summer's highs, which would put us in the mid-80s. So, I mean, there's room for significant gain. But from an overall S&D standpoint, I don't know why we would see it. I think there's plenty of supply out there, but you're seeing the same thing in live cattle. I mean, live cattle have gained significantly. Feeders are still down. You know, they've been stuck in a range, but I think that's because we have plenty of feeders available. It's the fats that we can't get our hands on. And, you know, part of me says the winter weather is a part of it just because it's hard to get supply availability, you know, when you're dealing with a foot of snow. But the other part of me thinks that people are just confident that our meat demand is going to remain strong as we move ahead.
As we move ahead, and of course, but you know, strong and ridiculous. Now, do you guys I know obviously we do a lot of grains. Do you guys have farmers and producers hedge fuel costs as well? Do you get involved in that, or do you believe in that?
I believe in it, but I don't do it for my growers. There are guys out there that do. Most of the time, if he's going to lock in his or hedge his fuel costs, he's doing it by just purchasing the physical. He's working with his fuel provider to lock in a cash value, and that's what he's doing. But I have a lot of guys that will lock in natural gas costs, or we even do it. I mean, last year we were hedging our diesel fuel, which we use the heating oil contract. And I'm going to tell you, it didn't work out so hot for us a year ago to try and do it, but we were able to buy our physical much cheaper and so it made up for us. But we do have some guys that do it. Most of them will do it, you know, by owning the physical versus trading on the board.
You know, I mean, it just, look, the bottom line is if you know it costs you X amount of dollars and that's part of your profit, because when you're putting together a marketing plan, I mean, you know, do you have, when you help somebody do the plan, I have them add an extra 10% right off the top because of the unknown. Do you guys do things like that as well?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. It's just like with your home budget. You've got to have a slush fund. You know, you in anything that you do, you have to have a slush fund, and a farmer needs to have a slush fund. I would rather he overvalue the cost of his inputs by 10%, get to the end of the year and discover he has an extra 10% of available capital, than sit here and try to cut his input values, you know, or imagine input values at a ridiculously low level to make him feel better about himself. I mean, it's just like anything else. I could sit here and say my costs are limited to blah, blah, blah in our home. And suddenly if I don't have a fund available for car repairs and you know, my car needs to get fixed, then where the hell do I pull that money from? You know, a farmer is no different, or any business is no different. We in our business have miscellaneous expenses that we factor into our budget that are a percentage of our overall anticipated expenses. And then that way, if we get to the end of the year and we don't use anything from the miscellaneous, then hell yeah, we've got that much more profit. But if we get to the through the year and start discovering our costs are increasing and we have no factor in place for that, we're screwed. You know, so it is something that a farmer needs to be aware of and factor in, I think, to his overall cost.
So Andy gets a bonus when they have extra. So now, when you trade, you do your are you a self executor? Do you do it off of technology, yes, or do you so you make,
yes, you make? I use the CQG trader, which it's not an advertisement. It's just what I use, and I use it more because I've used it since 2008.
I mean, well, CQG was CQG for, especially in the agricultural world, the commodity world, was always the platform that everybody used. I mean, I saw an interview you did with Trading Technology, so I was just curious as to who you used. And
yep, I used and I do. I would much rather do it on my own. I can see my bid offer ladder. The only time that I don't execute my own trades as if I'm in the OTC. And then I'll have my brokers do that for me. Or if I have a swap with another elevator or an exchange or something like that. But I much rather prefer to execute my own trade.
What would you do in the OTC, just out of curiosity?
A lot of times we sell calls. So because in the OTC market there, if our call is exercised, it converts into a future short. I'll move it into my regular hedge account and treat it as a hedge to arrive for the customer.
Oh, really?
So he'll pocket premium, and basically in the theory get paid to put a target order in place or maybe offset the cost of purchasing a put or something like that. You know, I've had a few different guys, depending on how they want to approach the market. And we've had a few guys that we purchased some in the money, you know, puts, so to speak. We bought some 10 when the board was at 1040 on the November 1035 there. We bought some 1030, 1040 puts and sold some $11 bean calls, just in the sense that we knew worst case scenario, we'd have $11 future shorts and we're happy with that. But if the board drops off, then we pocketed that $11 call premium and are making money on our put. Or I'll have some guys, we sold some December 410 calls the other day. And it depends on how you want to be set up.
All right, well, I got to cut you short. We're happy.
We'll have to talk about it next time. It's exciting. I like it.
Andy Setzer, the Goddess of Grains, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. Thanks so much. Always great to have you on.
Yes, thank you for having me.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Good night, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.